the president's intention right now is to donate his salary at the end of the year, and he has kindly asked that you all help determine where that goes. The way that we can avoid scrutiny is to let the press corps determine where it should go. He will, in all seriousness, I think his view is he made a pledge to the American people. He wants to donate it to charity. And he'd love your help to determine where it should go.
So I can confirm today that next week I will seek the authority of the Scottish Parliament to agree with the UK government the details of a Section 30 order, the procedure that will enable the Scottish Parliament to legislate for an independence referendum. The UK government was clear in 2014 that an independence referendum should, in their words, be made in Scotland by the people of Scotland.
The Congressional Budget Office has released its scoring, its assessment of the House GOP alternative to Obamacare. Some of the big headlines out right now: the bill would reduce the federal deficit by $337 billion. However, it would cost 14 million more people would be uninsured in 2018 under the House health bill.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, March the 14th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along on another snowy day, another business day, another edition of The Opening Bell. We will, of course, continue to follow the weather throughout our show this morning. We'll have traffic coming up, very important traffic and weather updates as we go along through the 5 o'clock hour. But first, let's head to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures off 22 points, S&P futures off about 3. The NASDAQ futures are off about 4 points. Around the globe, overnight in Asia first, the stock markets drifted in slow trading as investors awaited the outcome of the Federal Reserve's meeting, a batch of economic and political events later this week. Asian markets this morning, as we check those numbers, the Asian Dow is off, the Nikkei off about 25 points, the Hang Seng lower as well. European markets are generally lower as well this morning. The DAX, the FTSE, the CAC, all in lower territory. This after Britain's Parliament, you heard there in the opening montage, paved the way for Prime Minister Theresa May to launch talks with the European Union on Brexit, to formally exit the European Union. U.S. stock markets little changed on Monday as investors took a long wait-and-see mode. Now, about a 90 to 100% likelihood that there will be a Federal Reserve rate increase, short-term rate increase, tomorrow. The meeting ends. Two-day meeting of the Federal Reserve starts today, will end tomorrow. Announcement coming at about 1 o'clock Chicago time. The dollar fell against the yen and was steady against the euro. Benchmark U.S. crude oil rose today but remains below $48.50 a barrel. Some other news for you. Chicago-based Boeing and about 90 other aerospace companies are urging Congress to overhaul the U.S. tax system, saying a set of changes Republicans proposed last year, including a big cut for corporate taxes, the corporate tax rate, will make them more competitive globally and help create U.S. jobs. Boeing's chief executive, Dennis Muilenburg, was among those who signed a letter to Republican and Democratic leaders saying that he supports, his company supports, and others as well, that corporate tax cut and those tax rate changes. Other news you heard in the opening montage as well, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, out with its projection, and it's even worse than people thought in some cases. 14 million people could lose insurance in the first year, according to the CBO projection. Here are some other estimates compiled by CNN and Reuters. The White House, a White House document obtained by Politico, says 26 million people could lose insurance over the course of 10 years. The CBO says 24 million over that 10-year period. Brookings Institute says 15 million. S&P says about 6 to 10 million. The scoring now of that health care bill, the Republican health care bill. A little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking a little bit after life. Is there a life after death? Investigative journalist Liz Leslie Kane will join us with her new book, a well-known UFO and really crazy story investigator from a good, solid journalistic standpoint. She's gone into the afterlife to see if it's certainly exists. We'll tell you what she's found. But first, let's begin with the March Madness. It's the 2017 NCAA tournament is underway. The business of college basketball. We're happy to have with us today USA Today sports writer who has been writing a lot about not only the big dirt dance, as it's called, but about the finances of the NCAA. Steve Berkowitz is with USA Today Sports. He's with us this morning. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. I know it's a busy week for you. We appreciate your time here this morning. Let's start with the tournament. It's any big surprises in your mind from the tournament this year?
In terms of how the tournament was set up, I'm not sure that there were an inordinate number of surprises in terms of the teams that were selected. I think there was some quibbling about some of the seeding of teams, particularly if you're from a perspective of people in the Midwest and Big Ten country. I think there was some issues with where Wisconsin ended up being seeded. I think there were some questions nationally sort of about where Duke ended up being seeded. But overall, I'm not sure that there were an inordinate number of surprises in which teams were actually included in the field overall this year.
Well, viewers of the tournament see anything different this year? Are there any changes in that regard?
Not really. I mean, the way that viewers are going to see it from CBS's perspective, I mean, there have been a few announcer changes. Debbie Antonelli is going to be involved in the coverage to bring a female voice to this in a prominent position, I think, for the first time in, if not ever, and certainly in quite a while. In terms of how it looks on your TV, the NCAA has made some changes to how the floors are going to look. I think last year, in prior years, you've had the floors look all the same in places and in different rounds. They've given some things a little bit different that'll look on how it looks on the floor and things like that. But otherwise, I think it's going to be, as people have seen it and how it's run in the past with, the day-long, almost all-night coverage of games going all day long on the first in the first few days of the tournament, and it's spread across different networks of within CBS's framework, CBS and TNT, CBS and Turner, CBS, TNT, and True TV, and so forth, so that people can see all the games.
So the business of the NCAA, the focus, I think, is that at least the spotlight in recent days has been on the court action with regard to scholarship. You've written a lot about that. What is the overall theme of that lawsuit?
Well, what happened most recently was that there was a settlement of the damages portion of a lawsuit which is still ongoing, that basically challenges the NCAA's current limit on what athletes can receive from their schools for playing sports. Within the past 2 years, that limit went from being the traditional, tuition fees, room board, books, to covering the total cost of attendance. So there was money added to a scholarship to cover those kinds of travel and incidental costs. The ongoing lawsuit challenges even that limitation on what athletes can receive. So they're looking for an injunction that would change the NCAA's rules. But as part of that, there was also a piece of that case that sought damages for athletes who had played sports within the past 4 years. The case reached back that way under federal law, and they settled that portion of the case so that athletes reaching back 4 years and in some other instances recently are going to be able to get that sort of differential between the value of an old scholarship and the current cost of attendance scholarship. So that's costing the NCAA, presuming that settlement goes through, that'll cost the NCAA about $209 million. And the association chose to pick up all those costs, even though the association and 11 major conferences were named as defendants. The conferences themselves aren't paying for it. The NCAA is.
That's Steve Berkowitz, USA Today. Steve, hang on with us. We're going to take a quick break.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors in a wait-and-see mood left the indexes little changed yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed fractionally lower at 28,881. The S&P 500 was steady. The NASDAQ composite ticked up 0.2%. Just getting to work on Wall Street will be a challenge today, with more than 18 inches of snow forecast for some parts of the Northeast. Thousands of flights have been canceled at airports in New York, New Jersey, Boston, and Washington. The Federal Reserve may be about to hit the accelerator on rate hikes. Tomorrow, the U.S. Central Bank is expected to raise its benchmark interest rates. And with inflation showing signs of perking up, Fed watchers say there could be more than the three rate hikes originally forecast for this year. Employers boosted hiring in 13 states in January, while employment changed little in 36 others. The Labor Department says Alaska is the only state to show a significant decline in jobs. Joblessness in Oregon and Arkansas fell to their lowest since 1976. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 525, as we continue our pre-dawn business conversation. It's the business of college sports. Steve Berkowitz, a USA Today sports writer, is with us today. Steve, before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of these legal settlements, the big legal settlement recently. But the NCAA, I see $1.4 billion in expenses last year. Is some of that related to these legal expenses?
Yeah. In fact, that $209 million that we were talking about was booked into the expenses for that fiscal year because of the NCAA expecting that settlement to go through. So in their audited financial statement, that's when that was booked in. The NCAA also booked in the distribution that's going to be occurring this spring in April of $200 million to Division I member schools. That's a one-time supplemental additional distribution over what they normally distribute to Division I schools. The NCAA had accumulated over the years about $360 million in a type of endowment fund that they chose to liquidate to try to help schools out a little bit. So that was put into their $1.4 billion in expenses, along with their normal distribution of money to the NCAA, to the Division I member schools, on the order of about $560 million. So these expenses by the NCAA largely are distributions to the member institutions. It's not like this is money that Mark Emmert and people who work in Indianapolis are spending on, you know, airplanes and limousines.
There's been, it seems like, always this conversation about whether or not these student athletes will soon become or eventually become paid athletes. In your writings and your coverage of this, do you think that's ever a possibility?
If anything is going to happen beyond what is available now in terms of direct compensation to the athletes, it's going to be the result of a court action or some other type of legal action. I don't think you're going to see the schools be willing to offer sort of cash, as it were, to the athletes. I think there are other things that the schools over time may be willing or able to do in terms of providing health care benefits after athletes get done playing. They may eventually loosen up some of the limitations on athletes in terms of their ability to make money off of their names and likenesses while they're in college. But in terms of the school directly providing additional cash to the athletes, I think that's unlikely unless they're forced.
You know, people always look at the balance sheet on this. How about the report card? How are the student athletes doing in school in actual classroom settings?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, again, you're seeing some of the stuff that comes out of there's an annual report that's put together by Richard Lapchick's shop in Florida that they look annually every year at the graduation rates of athletes on the teams that are in the tournament. And, you know, there are some disparities between how men and women do. There are disparities in how African-American athletes do against other athletes. And so, you know, I mean, that's an ongoing question as to how, you know, what are athletes getting out of their educational experiences at schools. There are various metrics that the NCAA uses that show that graduation rates for athletes across the board are increasing. But, you know, again, how this is going within the most prominent sports of men's basketball and football and women's basketball, you know, there's a lot of questions about that. And you know, it's a very complicated question because you get not only into the graduation rate, but also the types of educational experiences that the athletes are having en route to graduation. And, you know, you have, for example, the academic fraud allegations that are ongoing at University of North Carolina. And so you have questions about this, and it's a very, very complex issue for sure.
Steve Berkowitz is a sports reporter and the editor, sports editor at USA Today Sports. It's a busy week for Steve at USA Today. You can read his stuff there. Steve, thanks for being with us in the Opening Bell.
Thanks very much for having me on.
All right, and you can follow Steve, too, on Twitter at Buy Berkowitz.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Leslie Kane is an investigative journalist who has covered UFOs. Her recent book is about surviving death, the life after death. Leslie Kane, the author and investigative journalist, is with us this morning to talk about her new book. Leslie, first of all, welcome to The Opening Bell. I'm a big fan, and your UFOs book, I absolutely loved that. Looking at it from an investigative standpoint, but you've gone into the afterlife here. Why did you choose this area?
Well, I've been interested in it for a long time, actually, just that I focused on UFOs for many years. But to me, it has a sort of a similarity in that it deals with a very large mystery, you know, something that we don't understand, but that's very interesting to people. And I'm very attracted to subjects that also that are mysterious, that generate wonder, that show that we don't understand reality yet. We really don't understand reality. And there are things that have come up during my work that illustrate that. I also like subjects that challenge the cutting edge of science, that scientists don't accept the data that we have on UFOs, and they don't accept a lot of the data we have that show that human beings have extraordinary mental capacities and psychic abilities. So I'm also interested in sort of challenging the status quo with these very big questions.
The idea of afterlife is one of those topics where there is smoke and there has to be fire there. Is that sort of why you went into this? I mean, there's so many different things pointing to the possibility of this, but no scientific proof.
That's exactly right. And there are so many interesting things pointing to the possibility of it. They're highly suggestive, and they're from very different areas of research. So my goal here was to draw together the absolutely essential evidence that is the most rigorous and the most compelling from a journalistic perspective. I don't think many journalists take this topic on. So I wanted to present to people what the key material is that shows the possibility of this.
Is the investigation more to prove or disprove notions like the afterlife?
Well, you can't prove it, as you very aptly stated. But so the investigation was really to try to show the material that most highly suggests that it could be true. We can never prove it. But there are some situations, some data and some circumstances that occur that are very hard to interpret any other way. So that's what I wanted to give people, and everybody can make up their own minds when they study this and read the material.
So as we get into this, what did you find?
Wow. Well, I looked at so many different areas, Steve, and I found, for instance, situations of the physical objects moving on their own. I studied a lot about near-death experiences, the question of whether consciousness can exist independently of the body, which I believe it can, and I believe we have data that shows that. Cases of very, very young children, 2 years old even, providing specific details about what they say was a past life, so specific that the investigators are actually able to locate who that person was, to find out who that person was, and to determine that the child's memories were accurate. That's very compelling, very hard to explain, because these are children that can barely talk.
It sort of reminds me of your work with UFOs. So many different people have had the same experience. For instance, when they say they have been taken by UFOs or aliens, they had described a very similar experience, and the same is true with the afterlife.
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, I didn't focus too much on the abduction aspect of the experiential aspect of the UFO phenomenon, but more just presented the data that shows that they actually exist. And I think here I'm sort of doing the same thing. I'm providing data that shows that these phenomena actually do occur that are suggestive of an afterlife. But how to interpret them is another question. But just the fact that they occur is enough to challenge the scientific paradigm.
Is it something that you want to see more technology? Is it something that maybe the better question is, do we not yet have the technology to be able to prove this one way or the other? And do you think it's coming?
It's possible. I mean, it's possible that through technology we might develop some kind of a mechanism. I know there are people exploring this, actually, some kind of a mechanism that would allow for penetration of different dimensions and possible communications through some kind of technological device. I mean, that would be absolutely fantastic. Who knows? It might happen.
as your investigation turned up something rather personal, I was struck by how you went about investigating all of this. Tell us about the personal part of this.
Yeah, well, I didn't expect to, you know, that this would occur when I was researching the book, Steve, but it so happened that my younger brother died unexpectedly in January of 2013, which was when I was just beginning the book, and of course was extremely tragic because it was unexpected, but it appeared that I received a series of communications from him, which I do write about in the book. I felt that I should include my own personal experiences in this because they were part of the whole exploration that I underwent. And so I have mixed in those with my actual research. And that also included experience I had with physical mediumship, with witnessing absolutely bizarre and extraordinary physical phenomena in a séance room. So I have woven that kind of material in with the actual research.
I get chills just hearing you tell the story because I can't imagine being in a situation like that. What was that experience like?
You mean the one where...
With your brother.
Yeah, I mean, it was very bizarre. And, you know, there was situations where I would be... And I did sometimes sort of ask for them. You know, I was very affected by his death, and I would go into a meditative kind of state and ask him to come through to me. And there was one situation where the day after I made that request, I was in my kitchen cooking, and I had a bottle of oil there on the counter. And the top suddenly flew up into the air, and it made a sound. And there was nothing in that bottle except for a little bit of oil and air. It sounded like a cork popping off of a champagne bottle. I didn't know what that was, but I thought it was possibly my brother. And then I asked him again, I don't know if that's really you or not, you know, can you show me? The next day, the same thing happened again.
You can probably hear the skeptics out there who may be listening to this saying, oh, boy, what would you tell them about what you learned?
I mean, it's true. And I don't know. I certainly respect people's, you know, skepticism. Absolutely. I mean, this stuff is really, really hard to believe. And I would just suggest that I would hope that the skeptics would be willing to read the whole book if they're interested, you know, if they want to learn more. To do their homework before they make opinions, you know, to study the literature. There is vast amount of literature on this topic. And hopefully to have some experiences of their own. There's nothing like personal experience to show you that these things are real.
Your last book was UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. It was an amazing book about how there are all of these phenomena that pilots are seeing that really go unreported, that we're really not taking serious. Since that book has been reported, has there been any movement to take these reports any more seriously?
Well, there certainly is a lot of movement in other countries, Steve, and I've been working sort of behind the scenes to try to interest the U.S. government. I mean, it really boils down to needing some kind of official staffer or official agency to deal with the UFO reports. So there is some movement in that there are some high-level people that are interested in it, but getting something like that to actually happen in a country in which we have so much taboo against it is very difficult. But I have been working with other countries, other governments, who are making a lot of progress.
One of the highlights of that book is an incident that happened at O'Hare here in Chicago, where there are numerous employees of the airport and airlines that saw this. You reported on it. The danger, it seems, to not find out what this stuff is to air travelers every day still exists.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that consider this the phenomenon of the UFO to be a potential safety hazard for aircraft. And that's a very good example. Over O'Hare Airport, there was this disc-like thing hovering. There was a disc hovering over that airport for about 5 minutes, and lots of people on the ground saw it. The pilots saw it. And could that have been a danger? I think it could have, because nobody knew what it was, why it was there, or what it might do. And yet, despite all of that, our government completely ignored it and didn't want to. They just said, oh, it was some kind of weather phenomenon. And it's also very difficult for the witnesses who see this to not feel supported by the people that they work for, their airlines, the governments, whoever. So it's a mess. We need to have a better system in place, and then we can do proper investigations also of these incidents that occur.
Leslie, I'm always excited to see what you're going to write about next. What have you thought about what you might tackle next?
Oh my God, I just started with this one, Steve. This book was so difficult to write, and I'm going to be staying with it for a while and learning more. And I'm going to be developing a website with lots of additional information on it for people to read who want to learn more. So I hope they will all visit that website.
Leslie, thank you for helping us think and provoking a lot of good ideas.
Thank you very much for having me, Steve.
Leslie Cain is an investigative journalist, New York Times bestselling author. Her latest book is called Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. Here's the website she was talking about, survivingdeathcain.com. And her last name, Cain, is spelled K-E-A-N. It's, again, survivingdeathcain.com. You can follow Leslie, too, on Twitter, at Leslie Cain. Again, K-E-A-N.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow Futures looking for a weak open on Wall Street, off about 23 points now. The S&P, NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Gold is trading up a little bit this morning, so is silver. Oil at $48.72 a barrel. Now the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, March the 14th, 2017. The Labor Department will release the Producer Price Index for February. The big date today is with the Federal Reserve. Policymakers begin a two-day meeting to set interest rates. The world is watching very closely. Markets are taking sort of a day off as they wait in what is expected to be an interest rate hike tomorrow at 1 o'clock Chicago time. It will be the third interest rate hike in 15 months, signaling more hikes probably coming this year, maybe three, maybe four. So we'll be watching that. It will definitely drive the markets today. In Frankfurt, Germany, automaker Volkswagen reports full-year earnings for 2016. South by Southwest continues in Austin. It includes the 20th annual South by Southwest Interactive Innovation Awards. And this is Pi Day, P-I Day. It is the Greek letter. It's the symbol for the ratio of the circumference of a circle to its diameter, pi. You'll hear a lot of people talking about that. No, they're not talking about cherry or apple. Just some of the things that could drive the markets today on this Tuesday, March the 14th.